Hey, it's Cole Swindell. After I give everything I've got to land a perfect vocal, I usually take five before jumping into the next track. And I've learned exactly how to recharge in that time. Some folks grab coffee. I hit a quick good luck spin. Next thing you know, the break is just as fun as laying down the track. A better break makes for a better take. Need a break? Let's chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus TNC supply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5, the game hour number two here on a Titans Monday. The Titans defeat the Chargers 23-20. We'll get back to your calls, your reaction coming up in a couple of minutes. But as always, in the 7 o'clock hour here on a Monday, we welcome in our pal Corey Curtis from News 2, who joins us here on the show. Corey, good win yesterday. Your biggest takeaway from yesterday's performance was what?
Well, first off, I've never seen a win like that. That's one of the weirdest finishes I've ever seen. But, you know, it goes back to, you know, last week we talked about blocking. You know, you give the quarterback time, you run the football, you cut out negative plays, and good things can happen. You know, Ryan Tannehill played like a pro, and his line played like a pro in front of him. And, you know, it was similar to what we saw against the Falcons, and they made plays down the field, and it's just, you know, it's boring to say that it all goes together, but it all goes together. And, you know, when one piece works, it allows the other pieces to work. Now we have to see if that one piece can work 2 weeks in a row.
Now, yeah, absolutely right. I think it's all about consistency moving forward, because this division, it seems like Indianapolis is on a roll now, and you can't fall too far behind what they're doing. So the big thing for them is consistency. Now, staying on Tannehill, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, it's with him at underneath center, it just seems like the offense, regardless of what's happening up front, and they did a great job up front yesterday at blocking, but even when they did the same thing with Marcus, it didn't look this crisp. You had your two starting receivers both catch six passes. You know, you had to tight end catch a lot of passes. It just seems like this offense, from a passing standpoint, it's a lot sharper. And I understand, yes, the offensive line blocked well, but even when they blocked well, when Marcus was underneath center this season, it didn't look like this.
Well, he was very accurate and sharp with the football. I think that is safe to say. And, you know, I knew they were going to push the ball down the field. You know, one of the things I joke with Arthur Smith, talking with him in the hall after the game, that I was really glad not to see, you know, seven screen passes in the first half. I mean, I feel like I've been drowning in screens and flanker, you know, whatever you call that, where he just drops off the line a yard and they throw him the football. We didn't see that. They pushed the ball down the field. He threw into small windows, and his receivers fought and made him plays. And I think, you know, we've all seen in the past that when you get Corey Davis involved early, it makes a difference. So they got him involved early. They got everybody involved early. But he pushed the ball down the field, and that had something to do with the success, I think, of the offensive line in the run game as well. I think his accuracy did too. I mean, he had a ridiculous throw to Corey Davis on a third and two in the second half, where he split two defenders, and that window was probably the size of a toaster. And so his accuracy, I think, had a lot to do with how it was able to move and how his receivers were able to make plays on some tight throws for him.
Didn't exactly get Delanie Walker into the game early yesterday, only five snaps. We'll get to that in a second. But Mike Vrabel, Corey, I think you look at his decision-making, you could have viewed him as one of the best coaches in the division last year, overcoming so much adversity and still putting his team in a position to make the playoffs in Week 17. You know, most of us thought he did as good a job as he could have done last year. This year, there's a dumbfounded, you know, I'm completely dumbfounded by a major decision by him again yesterday not to challenge. It seems like there's been some black and white decisions that are pretty obvious to the entire universe, and he's sort of going the other direction on it. What do you make of that again, and how concerned are you about the head coach? Because if they don't get three spectacularly lucky plays at the end of that game, we're talking about a loss right now and probably talking a lot more about Mike Vrabel.
Yeah, you know, you're absolutely right. And I'm just going to tell you, I'm surprised both those touchdowns got overturned. I don't think either of them was clear and obvious to overturn them, but they went their way, and good for them. You're talking about challenging the quarterback sneak spot.
Yes.
I did not see him push over the line. He turned his back. Maybe he got over, but I didn't see anything clear and obvious where it would have overturned it to
me. He didn't go. He didn't go backwards, though, Corey. Like, he didn't go backwards.
No, he did. It was a bad spot, but I didn't see anything on the replay that told me that he went across the line. I saw his back go to the line, but the ball was on the other side. But beyond that, you can't go for that. You can't. You got to punt the football. If you don't get it, you give it to them the 50-yard line, you're only up by 3 points, and that's exactly what happened. You've got a great defense. If you trust your defense to win the game, you punt the football. Now, he's, terrified of Phillip Rivers. Last year he went for two because he was terrified of Phillip Rivers, and he didn't want to punt the ball this time because he was terrified of Phillip Rivers. You know your punter is a weapon. You know your defense can play well. I think you've got to trust them to win the game for you at that point. To me, it's another very questionable fourth down to me. Like I said, I know other people are like, go for it. But for me, I am punting that football nine out of nine times unless I know my offensive line can get a push. And I don't know that about that group at this point. But, yeah, I mean, it's like every fourth down is an adventure. And I feel like I'm always on the other side of them.
Corey, did it look to you like Jeffrey Simmons played like he was basically a top five draft pick yesterday? Because that guy looks like an absolute monster. And I'd hate to see what he's capable of doing once he actually gets into pro shape.
Well, yes. We need to see it more than one game because that's a banged up Charger offensive line. But it doesn't matter. He's still playing against NFL players. And the comeback is nothing short of remarkable. I mean, this guy tore his ACL in February. We're talking 8 months. 8 months. And then he practices for 1 week. I was astounded that they activated him on Saturday and decided he was ready to go. And then I thought, maybe play 10 snaps. What did he play, 25 snaps? Mm-hmm. And he blows up
21.
The game-winning 21 snaps, and he blows up the game-winning fumble. I mean, he blows up that play and causes Melvin Gordon to redirect and Wesley Woodyard to make the play. I mean, I think the stat I heard is he already has more sacks and tackles for loss than Quinnen Williams, Ed Oliver, and Christian Wilkins combined.
He's a beast, no doubt about it. Corey Curtis News, too. We always appreciate the time and the insight. We'll talk to you again very soon.
All right. Game-saving victory, or not game-saving, season-saving victory.
There you go.
They still got to win 7 out of 9 to make the playoffs. That's going to be tough.
Thank you, Corey. We appreciate it.
All right, later, guys.
You got it. Corey Curtis, News 2. Yeah, I mean, season extended at least.
Yeah, I like the way you phrased it earlier. It, yep. It extended the season for them because if they lose that game, man, they're out of it.
Isn't it week to week, though, right?
Like, yeah, but the way Indy's playing, I don't think – the two best teams are Indy and Houston right now in this division.
That was an interesting game yesterday.
And it was a real interesting game. And if you fall behind, if you lose that game to the Chargers, essentially the Chargers are one up on you in a wild card situation because they've beaten you. You're two games down. Well, you're already two games down in the division, but then you're three games down in the division because of that loss. You are 1-5 or 1-6 now against the AFC. If they would have lost that game, it would have been short of they would have had to really no losses from here on out. Had they lost yesterday, they would have had to go perfect from here on out to make the playoffs. And I just don't think that would be the case.
All right, up next is Jameis Winston and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers as they come to town next Sunday for a noon kick here at Nissan Stadium. So the Titans had a great goal line stand Sunday afternoon, but there was a goal line issue Saturday night in Tuscaloosa. We'll go from the Titans to the Vols next on Morning Drive. Tennessee Volunteers head coach Jeremy Pruitt making no bones about it. He was pissed off Saturday night, and I don't blame him. And look, I'm an Alabama fan, and I don't hate Tennessee because I've always been fond of Tennessee and respected the program. I think Rocky Top's the greatest fight song of all time, I mean that. Like, all my vitriol as an Alabama fan is geared towards the University of Auburn. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, I was genuinely ticked off watching that game with what transpired on that goal line situation. I mean, the reality was, boys, Jarek Arentino was supposed to run some play not named a quarterback sneak. And he decided to, which I think is the more risky of the two quarterback sneaks, to go up and over mm-hmm. and potentially lose the football, as opposed to doing the Tom Brady and just plowing through your center's backside. And Jeremy Pruitt pulls him off the field as he's coming over. Mm-hmm. And I think it was the index finger and maybe a grazing of the thumb. It was a slight tug. And people lost their mind on Twitter Saturday night.
Because
just
a little tug. You can't do it. Pat Forty
of Yahoo. Well, yeah. Pat Forty of Yahoo tweets out, 25, 30 years ago, yeah, you could get it. Like, dude, we are so soft as a society.
No, you're right. I'm not saying you're not right.
It's so nauseating.
Let's move. Can we save the face mask grab and for just a second? Because I want to get into that. But
No, not really.
Because let's get to what Garantano did first set the scene. There's 7 minutes to go in the game.
He defied his coaching staff.
This is There's 7.5 minutes to go in the game. It's 28-13. If they score a touchdown, it is a one-score game on the road against Alabama without Tua Tagovailoa. And it would be considered Jeremy Pruitt's maybe best moment as a head coach
100%.
Currently, if he can get that in, if they can get that into the end zone. They run four plays and they can't get into the end zone, which, again, is sort of ironic, because what do we always do? We always complain about teams not just lining up and running the football on the goal line. Well, they did it and it didn't work. But here's the quotes from his center, Brandon Kennedy, who's the guy who snaps the football. I don't know if you know what a center is in football. But that's the guy who snaps the ball to the quarterback, has to know what's going on. Quote from Brandon Kennedy on what happened. I'm not sure. When we left the huddle, we had a play called, and then it changed at the line, and I'm not sure what happened. Trey Smith on the miscommunication. It's hard. What happened? It's hard, quote, it's hard to tell. I was pulling away from the play. Was it a handoff? I'm not sure. I don't want to give away our calls. Clearly, a quarterback sneak was not called. And clearly, Jarek Arentano just decided to go on his own over the top, which, to your point, Nick, is the worst of the two strategies from a quarterback sneak standpoint.
Yeah.
So that's what happens. So as he's coming off the field, Jeremy Pruitt's pointing at him and yelling, and he's, as he says in the interview, pissed off.
He should have been.
And Jimbo Fisher's face mask grab last year was 10 times worse.
Correct.
10 times worse. This was a half of a second jerk of the face mask. Now, I don't like it, but I also don't care. So that gets us to the point where we can discuss the face mask. Do you like my bigger question is what are you doing, Garantano?
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing if the play was?
He should short of Maurer being hurt, and even with the other kid Schrouder, or how do you say
it? JT Schrout.
Jarek Arentano should not play another snap the rest of this year.
Why? Does no one else on your offense know what you're about to run?
He basically ad-libbed and said, you know what, I'm going to take it into my own hands, and then I'm going to expose the ball at the goal line. Down 14, would have been a 7-point game. Trayvon Diggs runs it back 108 yards, and it's a 21-point game.
Game's over.
And the game's over.
Yeah.
And then people got to lose their mind on Twitter about, you know, Jeremy Pruitt over, you know, slightly tugging the face mask. I don't want to hear anymore, oh, these are kids. This is the SEC. This is big boy football. This isn't Pop Warner. If Jeremy Pruitt did that to a 9-year-old, I'd have an issue. Jarek Arentano is, what, 20 years old?
Probably older than that.
21. He was supposed to be a strength of this team. Good. He's been nothing but a liability. And he decides to say, you know what? I'm going to play backyard football. And I'm going to, you know, damn Jim Chaney, damn Pruitt. I'm just going to go up and over. And I'm going to cost my team a chance to compete in the fourth quarter. Thanks a lot, JG.
Derek, could you imagine Jeremy Pruitt, like Peyton Manning style, one of those Saturday Night Live skits where Jeremy Pruitt's just like yelling at 9-year-olds? Just screaming and yanking face masks.
And Pruitt was jacked the whole game. You could tell that game meant the world to him on Saturday night.
I mean, he knew he wasn't going to win the game, but I mean.
But he had his program in a spot.
They had an opportunity to make it a one-score game. And we know why. Tua wasn't playing.
Minor detail.
Exactly. So they had to change their offense somewhat because Tua wasn't in the game. But, hey, that's not Pruitt's fault. Well,
no.
I guess it is his fault because his guys tackled him and he twisted his ankle. So kind of his fault, but it's not.
Well, he holds on to the ball too long. So you have a problem with the face mask?
I really don't have a problem, but like, you know, we say this all the time. You got, as much as I think we are wimpified, and that's not a word, but I'm going to make it a word. Wimpified.
Wussified?
Yeah, wussified, wimpified.
It's the wussification of America.
Yeah,
it's got to stop.
We've put these young kids in such in the position where, you know, you can't say anything to them. Because if you do, they start crying or they're going to tell. And it's just like, and I'm just saying something minor. I'm not saying something big where, yeah, they should go tell because adults shouldn't be doing that. I'm saying something like the face mask or, you know, just saying something on the practice field to a guy. I think nowadays you just can't. You got to know what the climate that we're in. And again.
Well, how about
I don't see anything wrong with Jeremy Pruitt with what he did.
How about the climate of the game? It's the third Saturday in October. Tennessee's much closer than anticipated in a ball game of heated magnitude, and his quarterback defied what was called. And you know, okay, he gave him a little. It's not like he jerked it five times
right.
Like Jimbo Fisher.
Listen, Nick, you are absolutely right.
Come on, you're an old school guy.
Exactly.
You should be with me here.
I am with you. I don't see anything wrong with it, but.
But you understand the reaction.
Yeah, I understand the reaction.
Right.
It's the climate that we're in, though. Even the old school people, they feel they got to say something because if they don't, they're validating what Coach Pruitt did. So they like we watch people on television a lot and when you know watching sports shows and they say one thing and I've been around guys. They say one thing, but then they say the opposite off air. It's like, are you just saying it because that's what everybody else is saying or you think that's what's supposed to be said because of the world we live in now, or do you really believe it? And I think a lot of them just say it just to be said it because they don't want to, you know, the Twitter world to get on them and make them seem bad. Again, I don't see anything wrong with that, with what he did, but you know there are going to be a lot of people on Twitter going after Jeremy Pruitt, and he's going to have to come out and apologize today in his press conference because the AD probably got on him, the president got on him, you know, Twitter world got on him.
Damn,
so
Twitter
now,
world.
Exactly, now he's going to have to come back and apologize when he probably really don't because he's like, listen, these are my kids. I know what I'm doing. You know, I've been coaching these guys for the last 2 years. I know how to coach them.
And first of all, that's why you listen to this show is because we may be wrong all the time.
Exactly.
But we are authentically wrong.
Absolutely.
We tell you exactly what we think. It doesn't mean we're right, ever.
But we say it with conviction.
But we say exactly what we mean, and we're not saying what we think is what you want to hear, you know, or some fabricated argument about whatever. When we yell at each other, we're actually yelling at each other. Like Nick and I on Twitter yesterday. Go
exactly.
Read it. It was highly entertaining. But I also, you know what's interesting is the things that you guys are talking about, I feel like those were going through Pruitt's head in the moment. Because I feel like he reaches up for the face mask and wants to rip off Jarrett Garantano's head.
Oh, yep. Probably so, yeah.
And it looks like he restrains himself. To be honest with you, it honestly looks like in the moment I was watching it happen, and it looks like he wants to jerk him all the way to the ground, but he like lets go.
And then pull him.
Right, and drag him to the sideline and then like tie him up to the bench and say you're never
like you're never playing again.
But do you guys see what I'm saying? Like it felt like in the moment he even knew there was going to be backlash, and so he like stops himself in the middle of the the face mask grab and kind of just like it's just like a little
moment of growth for Pruitt.
Like you could almost see him going, "Oh, I probably shouldn't do this." As he's grabbing the face mask,
and then he just yells,
and then
at
he
him.
Stops, and so he was clearly furious. And if
he had every right to be.
And if you're quarterback in a one score game on the road against number one Alabama, the arch rival that you haven't beaten in more than a decade, you're a coach that has a program that no one really knows if you're growing or developing or not. And you've got a chance to cut it to one score with 7 minutes to go. All you need then is one stop to get the ball back down one score on the road against Alabama. And so I understand the anger if a quarterback completely makes up a play, tries to dive over the top, and ends the game for you. I get the frustration. And like you said, Derek, I don't really have a problem with a little bit of anger towards 21, 22-year-old kids. You know, like... I think what Jimbo Fisher did was a little much because once you grab it and start yanking it around and pushing it, pulling, like then you're starting to
you might hurt him.
You might hurt the guy and listen, necks and head injuries, we get it. It's just not a good look because it's going to be blown up on Twitter. But I think you could tell that Pruitt in the moment realized, oh, this isn't going to come off well. I need to be – like, it's like he started it, and then he was like, oh crap, I gotta stop. And I think he actually stopped himself and showed restraint in the moment. So yeah. I'm with you guys. I don't think that the face mask thing is that big of a deal. I find it fascinating that Jarrett Garantano did what he did. I just find that fascinating. Like, did he think – did he see – I want to know, what did he see? Did he see something that he thought –
does he have autonomy to change an ad-lib like that?
Clearly, Pruitt doesn't think so, I guess, right? Like, based on his reaction. I mean, listen, give Tennessee credit for fighting the way they did to be in that situation. Now, the score, you know, was one-sided, and Tua left with what looked like a really gnarly ankle injury at the end of the second quarter.
Yeah, whoa, it's just
1 to 2 weeks, maybe more. I'd be surprised if that's not, like, just like last year, I would not be surprised if the injury to Tua is something that affects him the rest of the year. That to me was one of the biggest developments of the college football weekend. Is against LSU, if you can't plant, if you can't run, if you can't escape, against Clemson, against Georgia, against Auburn, when you have to play all these elite level teams, not Tennessee, I just don't think that looks so gnarly. There's no way that's not going to affect him down there. He may play and he may win and he may be successful, but there's no way that's not going to affect
him. Yeah, they're calling it basically a repeat of what he had last year, just different leg this time around. Mm-hmm. I guess he had some sort of quick procedure. Arkansas this week, he'll sit out. They should be able to roll anyway. Mm-hmm. Then they have the bye week, and then they get LSU. That could put a damper on the whole game. Think about that.
Hey,
because like Bama LSU this year, I don't care either.
DBA's been picking LSU.
Bama LSU this year is going to be like a complete 360 or 180 from the 2011 game. From 9-6, this game should end up being 45-42, and now one of the two main cogs could be at like 75%.
Well, it still should be a good show if he can play. It does, like I said, what happened to him last year? He got hurt. He started getting banged up around, you know, the turn of the calendar to November, the LSU game, the Mississippi State game. He didn't look fully healthy. He, you know, Auburn, you go into the Georgia game, he doesn't look fully healthy. He doesn't look like the same Tua that we had seen all season. And so if he holds on the ball a little bit long, doesn't have the same mobility, all this stuff, I think, you know, it could completely change the entire dynamic of the college football season. I mean, that's – and what does the committee do if they – let's say Tua doesn't play against LSU. And they lose to LSU, but then he comes back and they beat Auburn, and they're 11-1, and the committee has to look at a team with a healthy Tua, and their only loss is to a great team that didn't when they didn't have Tua. How much does the committee take that into account? And I think they should. The Kenyon Martin thing. I mean, it is one of the more fascinating developments in the entire college football season. And it sucks that we're not going to see Tua at full strength for the full year. But, man, does it make it more interesting.
Coming up next, a mea culpa for Mr. Mason for smashing Missouri. Back after this.
Well, first of all, you know, honor to God. You know, it's been a rough patch, man. But I told my team this, and I want everybody to understand this. Okay? A lot of people want this job, so they think, but I'm the man that's built for this job. Every day, man, we grind. We grind. Don't question us. Don't question who we are, what we do, or how we play. We're Vanderbilt men. Commodores, Akron, die!
Derek Mason.
That's our Derek Mason.
Fired up. Both of them.
Man, you got to love it.
I got to give him mea culpa. I can admit when I'm wrong, and Derek Mason may very well end up getting fired at the end of this year by Malcolm Turner, but last Tuesday on this show, because we didn't get to the Vandy and the college stuff until Tuesday of last week because of the Titans debacle on Sunday, and we were all tightened up on Monday, but Tuesday I said, it's over for Derek Mason, you got to make a change, he needs to be fired at the end of the year, and he took the questions, and we all peppered him on Wednesday in his weekly appearance, handled it with class. And you know what? They went out there as a 3-touchdown home underdog, and they kicked Missouri's butt.
For those that don't speak Latin, that is an acknowledgement of one's error or fault.
Exactly.
Mea culpa, just to make sure all of our publicly educated humans understand that. Listen, Derek Mason deserves to do that, frankly. I mean, that is a very good Missouri team that they defensively actually did a very good job on. I thought the most interesting thing to come out of all that, congrats on the win. The win's huge, all that. The most interesting thing to come out of that comment and that interview, and then I think he repeated it again in the post game, was this odd sort of, you know, not everybody wants this job kind of comment.
He said everybody wants it, but I'm the man built for it.
Well, there was, he explained it a little further in the post game, and it went towards the not many people, like the way I took it was not many people really want or could do this job well. And the bottom line is no one really has done that job outside of James Franklin. So there was some, to me, those comments came from a deeply rooted place of, this is an impossible place to win, and they have not given me the support I need. I am putting words in his mouth. He did not say that out loud, but that is what I heard. I don't know about you guys, but that sounded like, you know, I haven't gotten the support I need. I haven't gotten the resources and financial support that I want. You know, everyone's dogging me right now. I'm facing a new athletic director and challenges with the job. My team's not playing well. Like, I'm hearing a coach say, nobody wants this job, but I do because I want to be here and I want this job. And I'm willing to deal with the BS that comes along with being the coach here because I like it and I want to build the program in this sort of really positive, community-driven way. And I don't know. Maybe I'm reading too much into a couple of emotional comments from the head coach.
No.
That's what I heard.
I don't think you are. I think it's just built up frustration. You know, you have a program that, you know, frankly, I think if they would just help him more, they can win more. And I'm not saying they're going to win 9-10 games a year, go to the championship game. I'm not saying that, the SEC champ. What I'm saying is if you help him, he can get more victories from his team. I think a lot of that came from just frustration. You're frustrated with your quarterback. You thought you were bringing in a guy that could, you know, pick up where Shermer left off. A guy that has played a lot of football, a veteran guy. You thought he would come in and be able to get the job. And frankly, he's been the problem up until Saturday. He's basically been the problem for
this
team.
Well, and the reality is, too, you go to your third-string quarterback on Saturday and Mo Hassan, who looked, you know, he was serviceable. Mm-hmm. You gave Keyshawn Vaughn the ball over 30 times. He had over 30 touches, I think 33 combined rushing and receiving touches. And I've been critical of Tarver. Missouri's been scoring points since that Wyoming loss.
Yep.
They held Missouri to 14 points.
Well, and they scored like 40 something in the Wyoming loss. Their offense has been clicking, and for Vanderbilt's defense to do that, give them a lot of credit. They deserve a lot of credit. Jason Tarver and Derek Mason, they did the job. Now, does it mean it saves the season? Does it mean it saves his job? Does it mean that all of a sudden they're going to start winning a bunch of games and they're going to beat Tennessee again? Like, that all remains to be seen. But in the moment, you had a right to celebrate, and you celebrated, and a lot of people want this job, so they think.
Yeah.
It's the quote.
I mean, again,
that's like saying to people, y'all don't know how tough this is.
Yeah, it screams, this is probably the toughest job in the SEC.
It's not probably.
Yeah.
It's 100% the toughest job in the SEC.
Exactly, because we're not getting the support from nobody, from the fans, from faculty, nobody.
Not even Nick Cale.
Not even Nick Cale. He didn't jump off the bandwagon. He's off the ship and swimming somewhere else. But what I do, this is the thing.
He's in a Kyle Schirmer life raft.
Exactly. He was like, Kyle Schirmer gone? I'm gone too.
I'm floating around in Kyle's dinghy.
I just have a volleyball and his name is Wilson.
His name is Schirmer. But here's the thing. With this whole Mason thing in this program, and in regards to us now, I think what we do a good job at and why it seems like when he's talking with us, you know, he don't mind. Hey, he knows what he's going to get, and he answers the questions, and we keep it moving. Because
he told us his wife criticized his football team.
Because what we don't do is we don't browbeat him. We just we tell it, you know, how we see it. And things that I know he sees, that we know he sees, and how can you get better, coach? What can you do to get better? And then once the interview is over, we'll talk about it more, but we don't browbeat it. We just don't beat it down. Because I understand. I think we've been here long enough that we understand that is a difficult place to win it. I could see if he was at Alabama or Pruitt at UT and you're not winning. Then we're like, hey, something you need. But he's not there. Right. He's at a different place, and it's hard. I mean, extremely hard. There's only, you know, amongst all sports, it's hard to win there. Yeah. The only person that is doing it consistently is Corbin. That's the only person. And that's because he
and
has
the women's,
good,
and the women's
and the
bowling
women's,
team.
Yeah,
bowling
and the bowling team, yeah.
Bowling.
But he's
very
got
good,
it.
Very good program.
He has his own little world, and he's doing what he does, and he does it better than anybody in the country. But when you're talking football, it's just they don't get the help that they need. And he's frustrated. And that win, all of it just came out. He probably was upset with us because we did question him last week, and he's upset with everybody else.
That's what I was going to say. Is it's not like he understands that Nick, for example, that you have to ask the tough question right out of the gate. Hey, coach, your product was sort of unwatchable last mm-hmm. weekend. How are you going to solve that? Like, I think there's a respect. It's not personal with us, clearly, because we all love the guy personally.
Exactly.
Again, he's the only SEC coach in the league that I would trust to babysit my children. Like, I would not.
I would trust Nick. That's because I know him a little bit.
Yeah, man, that's true. You know.
But what if you came home? What if you came home from date night and he's yelling "anchor down" at your kids?
You know what?
In the living room.
You know what?
While Mickey Mouse is on.
After spending the last 48 hours consecutively with my two children, they need a little coaching right now, okay? All right?
You wouldn't let Coach O watch your kids?
Down. Come on, Brady.
I am cool. You wouldn't let who?
Coach O. You wouldn't let Coach O watch your kids?
I don't know.
They're not talking funny.
Yeah, what would happen? My daughter already is working on her speech patterns right now.
He would mess everything up.
But, you know.
Hey, Daddy, I want to watch Moana.
It's like, what did you say, baby?
She's like, Daddy, I want an Elsa braid. Daddy, give me that. I need an Elsa braid. No. Yo, Olaf. Yo.
I was like, huh? What did you say, baby? My God, now we got to reteach his baby English.
Well, Incredibles. One, two, or three. Which one do you want?
Moana, go Tigers.
Oh, man. Listen, the point is we all personally root for Derek. When we ask him tough questions, he knows it's not personal.
Uh-huh.
And he knows that. But you bet that we're not the only ones asking those questions.
Exactly.
We're not the only ones that are sort of, you know, that there's pressure on him. He understands. Listen, he's making millions of dollars to coach a sport, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's also keep some perspective here. So he understands, and you could tell with that sort of emotional release after a win that you can tell it's affecting him. And what matters is it affecting you in a way that creates productivity and victory, or does it affect you where your team quits and you walk away from the game and you get angry and you start yelling and it led to a win, right? And so you've got to give them credit for that, and they deserve the credit for that. Just like with Tannehill yesterday, it was good. Let's see it again. Let's see what it leads to. What's the next thing on this? Because this is sports, and the one thing we know about sports is it doesn't matter what you did yesterday. It's what have you done for me lately? So now you got to figure out what you're going to do tomorrow. So let's find out what Vanderbilt football looks like the rest of the way. If they can play defense like that, maybe they get a couple more wins, and maybe we feel differently about this team at the end of the year. And then we'll go from there. But he deserved to have a little bit of release. I'm reading between the lines on this, and I'm hearing Derek Mason say, none of y'all want this stinking job, so let me continue to battle, is what I'm hearing, because everyone thinks they want the job, but they don't.
You think, as Jim Mora once said,
you want it.
You think you know, but you don't, and you never will.
Mm.
All right, right now, your chance.
Wrestler?
No, that was Jim Mora.
Oh, Jim Mora.
Yeah. Remember the Colts coach?
Yeah, I know.
When he blew up?
I know who Jim Mora is.
Yeah.
I thought you said Jim Moore.
Playoffs?
Isn't there a wrestler, Jim Moore?
No.
No?
That's Jim Ross, probably.
Jim
what
Ross?
You're thinking. Not a wrestler, but yeah, Jim Ross.
We'll get Jim Ross on the show again soon, too. Right now, your chance to win a pair of tickets. And by the way, Boomer Sooner, it fell out
there. Dude,
that
was the funniest thing.
We can talk about that later, too.
That's the funniest thing I've seen all weekend.
I'm glad nobody was hurt. There.
Gus Johnson's like, boy, that was scary. Ha ha! Jalen Hurts. Oklahoma rolling. Partner, Joe Klatt. Norman, Oklahoma.
He does kind of speak and like, he just like yells words at you.
C.D. Lamb.
He didn't
had a lamb chop last night, partner. They know how to cook meat down here in the Big 12. Ha ha! Your chance to win a pair of tickets to see Nashville SC at First Tennessee Park for the first round of the USL playoffs is this Saturday right now. If you want tickets, be caller 5-615-737-1025. Back after this on Morning Drive.
Listen, you don't have to be caller 5 if you're going to call Cool Springs MD. You could be caller number 1. Or, heck, you could be caller number 21 and still get in and see the good folks at Cool Springs MD. Because over the last year, I've been telling you, more men have seek help for hormone deficiencies than imbalances. Dr. Jeffrey Lodge and his wife Daphne, along with that experienced staff, give men the treatment required to improve their quality of life. Cool Springs MD services have already helped many men at the Brentwood, Nashville, Franklin, which I live in, and the surrounding areas in Tennessee with improving their immune systems, excuse me, energy levels, cognitive functions, and more. And you got to understand, when I walk in the morning, I'm on high. My energy level is 100. And you know why? Because I went to see my good friends over at Cool Springs Indy. I've told you this story forever, man. I felt lethargic. I felt tired. You know, it just felt like my body was worn down. I didn't know whether it was because I was working out a lot or just getting older. And you know what I did? I went to Cool Springs MD, talked with Dr. Jeffrey Lodge, got some he consulted me with a few things, and then he gave me the necessary things that I needed to boost my energy levels. And he can do the same with you. That experienced staff can do the same with you. They are there to connect you with the medical care you require to have a healthy and enriched life. And man, we need a healthier lifestyle, because when we are healthy as men, everyone else feeds off of that. And there's no better time now to achieve a healthier lifestyle. Men, what are you waiting for? Give Cool Springs MD a call today. Make that appointment. Pull out your smartphones. Pull out your pencil, your pen, whatever it is you have next to you. Pull over if you're driving, because you're going to need this number, because I guarantee you, not too many things are guaranteed in this world, but I guarantee you that this will make your life different. Here's the number, 615-486-3458, 615-486-3458, or visit the website, because mama going to be happy if you visit this website, coolspringsmd.com.
That is how it sounded on Saturday as the Nashville Predators drop a home one to the Florida Panthers. Welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. So the Predators lose. They are now 4-4 on the year. And I just wanted to like look into a trend, because I woke up Sunday morning and I'm thinking, all right, you know, there was a lot going on Saturday night with college football, and the Predators lose again on Saturday. And I'm thinking, do the Predators ever win a game on Saturday? It feels like they always lose on Saturday. So I went back and I looked. They're 0-3 this season on Saturday games. And if you go back, and I went and pulled up the schedule from last year.
Oh, God.
Yeah. This is just how pathetic my life is. I went all the way back to January 19th.
Were you having Tito's while you were doing that?
No, this was with my coffee.
Oh, okay.
Sunday morning before I got into
Tito's
NFL
in
mode.
The coffee? Tito's in the coffee?
No.
So Pred split stats is your idea of a good Sunday morning coffee.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cup of coffee, little breakfast sandwich, and looking at previous seasons.
I don't even like college football split stats on,
exactly,
on a Sunday morning.
So the Predators, going back to 2019 of January 19th, so last year, January 19th, 2019, through this past Saturday night, are now 2-11 in their last 13 Saturday games. Mm. I don't know what that means. I don't know if that's a trend. I don't know if they're doing something wrong on Friday night that leads to a bad Saturday, but they just don't play well on Saturdays.
You know the song, Boogie Night, dun, 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 Boogie Night.
I mean, it's okay,
I think,
for
they
other...
did that on Saturday night, but for the Preds, it's losing night, dun, it's... dun, 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 losing night, dun, 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 dun.
Stunning.
Maybe they should stop playing on Saturdays.
No, this is stunning analysis. I think you both should continue. Listen, other teams come to Nashville and get the Broadway flu. Nashville is not supposed to get the Broadway flu on Nashville, mm-hmm, or on Friday nights. I don't care about the week of the night. I know it's a funny stat and an interesting one maybe to note and maybe keep track of moving forward. All I care about is you just got to stop going down by two goals.
Mm-hmm.
You got to stop losing the first and second period. You got to stop being down by two goals in the third period, because you're not going to survive that way. They fight back hard against, was it the Kings a couple of weekends ago that they fought back and made it a 4-4 game and then, mm-hmm, gave up a goal with a minute to go. Then they fought back down by two to tie it up. They were trailing the Red Wings, trailing the Wild. They've trailed in almost every game, it feels like, other than I think the San Jose game. And they've trailed in every game early. We've talked about it already. They are good enough, and it's a good trait to have, the resiliency to fight back and to get yourself back tied up and be in a game like that. That is a good characteristic and trait to have. To callous that part of your game is a good thing to have when you go into the postseason. But you cannot survive an 82-game season trailing two goals all the time. So they have to solve that problem. Pekka can't stop everything, and he played pretty well. But again, they fight back. They tie it up at two. Kyle Turris's goal, by the way, holy smokes. He splits two defenders, just skates right around him, goes and just goes top shelf, short side.
Playing on the second line.
A spectacular goal from Kyle Turris to tie the game at two. And then you get it right back a couple minutes later. And it's, again, it's not Pekka's fault. It's the defense's fault. So they've got to stop being down. You can't play behind two goals the entire season. It's not going to work.
They are the Kansas City Chiefs of the National Hockey League. They can score with anyone or better than anyone. Well, they are the number one scoring team in hockey still, I believe, even after only scoring two goals. But, they do give up goals as well. And they got to fight back. And, eventually that wears on the team when you got to put together so much energy to fight back and then tie it up and then ultimately – either in some cases win or in the case Saturday lose. So they're going to have to get that fixed. And we sort of knew this was going to be a byproduct of, losing certain guys. And, yeah, you bolstered your offense, but at what expense? And moving forward, you can't have any injuries. Because if you're playing, subpar defense now, if you get injuries toward the end of the season, it's going to really, it's going to put a lot more pressure on those guys to score goals.
615-737-1025 is the number. You can always tweet the show. Follow us on Twitter at 1025_MD. We will kick off hour number three with our buddy Wes Rucker from Go Vols 24/7 next. We'll get into the Alabama-Tennessee game with him and also some of the officiating, not just in the Bama-Tennessee game, but also that Florida-South Carolina game. I think there was a lot of bad officiating in the conference this weekend.
Penn State-Michigan. A lot of bad penalties or not calls, pass interference on both sides that led to Penn State winning that game.
And we're typically not a show that really harps on refs, but boy, it was a rough Saturday.
Yeah, it was, and so we'll get into that a little bit here. But there's about four pass interference penalties in the Michigan Penn State game that probably all went Penn State's way, and then Michigan still has a chance to win the game and drops the ball in the end zone.
Yep,
man. Tough one for Michigan.
All right, Wes Rucker, Go Vols 24/7 coming up next, and then we will get back to the Titans here on Morning Drive.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.